This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Oregon, Washington, Colorado, and Utah have all adopted some form of comprehensive vote-by-mail policy. In many cases, participation increased, costs went down due to fewer staff being needed at traditional polling places, not to mention shorter wait times at polling sites. The nonprofit Indiana Vote by Mail wants to make it happen for our state, but there are some very big challenges ahead of them. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. What are your concerns about vote by mail? Would you use it? Is Indiana ready for it? Again, Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana or 866-476-3881. Joining me now is Barbara Tully. She is president of Indiana Vote by Mail. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
And Vice President Shelley Brown. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
And joining us on the phone is Phil Kiesling. He's the founder and board chair of the national organization Vote at Home. Thanks for joining us, Phil. Is Phil there? All right, we'll start with Barbara. So, Barbara, what are we talking about here? What does your group want to see happen?
We know that Indiana has a very low voter turnout historically. If you go to the Secretary of State's website and look at the online data for voter participation rates, goes back to, I think, 1990. You can go back on the Secretary of State's website for data. And our average voter turnout rate in general elections, not midterms, but, you know, the off-year election or not primaries, excuse me, is about 52% for the state. Well, if we've got 4.5 million registered voters in the state, we can do better than that. What we've learned in all the research that Shelley and I and others in our group have done is that voter turnout just tends to be higher across the board, not for one type of voter or another. When voters have the chance to get a ballot in the mail, receive it at home, sit and think about what the issues are and who the candidates are, and do a little bit of research, make their choices, seal the ballot in an envelope, sign the back of the envelope, and then return it. And it tends to increase participation across the board.
It sounds a lot like absentee voting. What's different?
It is exactly like absentee voting. Absentee voting is a ballot being provided to a voter. In Indiana, you have to apply for it. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But absentee voting is a ballot being provided in the mail to the voter by the election office, and then the voter filling it out and sending it back in. What vote by mail does is take that to the next level by provide ballot tracking on the outbound envelope to the voter. It's got a barcode on it. There's nothing on the ballot. Obviously, the ballot remains anonymous because we want voting to be confidential. Mm. But on the outbound envelope to the voter, there is a barcode. On the inbound envelope that the voter sends back, there is also a barcode. That's full-on vote-by-mail because it allows the voter and the election officials to know in what stage of the process the ballot is. As the voter can track and say, oh, has the ballot been sent to me? Oh, I can see it's been sent to me. It's on its way. I should get it in a few days. A week later, you still don't have it. You can call the election office and say, I haven't gotten my ballot, you know. Likewise, the election office, when they get the ballot back and they scan that barcode in, the voter can go on a website and go, oh, I see the election office got my ballot back. I have confidence that my vote is going to be counted.
Barney from Twitter, we've already got a tweet. He writes, yes, 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 1,000 times yes to vote by mail in Indiana. I moved to Indiana from Seattle, Washington about a year and a half ago and voted for 19 plus years by mail in Washington State. Barney says it works. It's easy. It's safe. Leaves no excuse not to do your civic duty. Vote by mail makes so much sense. Do it ASAP. It sounds like a ringing endorsement.
Well, it's funny because every group that we've talked to, and part of what we do is as the advocacy and outreach that we do for Indiana Vote by Mail is to go and talk to community groups. And without anybody ever, no community group that we have ever talked to has said, that's a horrible idea. I would hate to receive my ballot like that. I mean, everybody's kind of like, huh, after they learned about it, that kind of makes sense. Why don't we do that in Indiana? Well, there's lots of reasons why we don't do that in Indiana.
Phil, do we have you back on the line?
Yeah.
Okay, Phil, thanks for joining us, first of all. And this is obviously working in the Pacific Northwest, Washington State. We just heard from Barney, who just moved here from Washington State. You are from Oregon, which has had the policy in place the longest, vote by mail, a comprehensive system. California is sort of in transition to this sort of automatic vote by mail system. Are things different out there that that have allowed this to come a little quicker, or was this just an idea that was born out there, and so that's why you've got it now?
Well, it was born out here, but it's an idea that can easily be replicated in all 50 states, because all 50 states have mailed out ballots. If you think about it, they're called absentee ballots, but 33 states don't even require an excuse anymore. And we're up to about six that automatically send it out, as Barbara described. Colorado, I'll add that to the list. And in some ways, I use Colorado as a model, even though I'm proud of Oregon. They do some things that are, I think, even more cutting edge. And people are familiar with it. They like it. And it is very bipartisan. In fact, it started in Oregon as an idea embraced by a Republican Secretary of State. I happen to be a Democrat who came later. Voters, when they have a chance to do it, very quickly begin to love it. I likened it to the green eggs and ham effect, the famous Dr. Seuss story that I read as a kid and read to my own kids. There may be people that like the tradition of voting, or, you know, how would this work, fraud, mischief, all those possibilities. But we've had none of that, and if you tried to take it away from voters in Oregon, Washington, these other states, I think they'd throw you out of office in an instant. It's very, very popular, and it works really well.
We're talking about the idea of Indiana moving toward a comprehensive vote-by-mail system, and we're on the phone with Phil Kiesling. He's the founder and board chair of the national organization Vote at Home. Phil was also the Secretary of State of Oregon in through the 90s, really. And we're also with the Vice President and President of Indiana Vote-by-Mail, the nonpartisan nonprofit in Indiana, trying to make this happen here. John on Facebook sent us this comment. I moved from Washington to Indiana 5 years ago, another example here, and was surprised and disappointed that I couldn't vote by mail. Indiana could and should do a better job informing their electorate and providing access to polling places. Vote by mail is a big part of the answer. Is this something that you've heard before, Shelley?
Oh, yes. We've heard it from many voters before. And I would challenge everybody who knows somebody in one of the vote-by-mail states to call your friend and ask them, because they're going to tell you they love it and they like it. It works really well for them. So, yes, we do hear that.
The timeline, Phil, is one thing that I have a question about. You said that it was a Republican predecessor in the Secretary of State's office. You were Secretary of State through the 90s. And if it was your predecessor, that means the idea was alive in the 80s and early 90s. But Oregon didn't adopt it until 2000. It sounds like there was a lot of time there where, you know, lots of different variables were being considered.
So here's how it progressed. We went first to letting anyone get an absentee ballot if they wanted one. You didn't have to go through an excuse. We then gave local governments, and this is the big step, the option to do it for local elections and the school bonds, school board, municipal officials, mayor races, et cetera. And all through the 80s, counties started doing that, mailing out ballots to every voter for these elections and really not having that traditional polling place. They still had places that you could go if you needed to update your registration or even just wanted to give a person a ballot, your ballot in person. But the big change happened in the 90s when the question came up, well, if we're doing it for all these elections and it's working great, a lot higher turnout, why don't we do it for the primary and the general election? And the opposition in the 1990s, quite honestly, came from my own political party. Yeah, it came from the Democrats. We got a bill passed bipartisan in 1995. It got vetoed by the Democratic governor. But then what happened was we had a special election for U.S. Senate vacancy. Some states fill vacancies with special elections. And when a Democrat won, then the Republican legislators decided, well, maybe it's not such a good idea. This infuriates me. It's good for democracy, small d. It doesn't matter which party it affects if you get a lot more people voting and people like it. But it took a ballot initiative in Oregon to get it passed 2-1. Now, Indiana does not have that option. Indiana still requires excuses. I usually hate criticizing other states, but if I look at the absentee ballot application in Indiana right now, if I'm concerned about my health about going to a poll, that is not a legal reason that I can get an absentee ballot. If, however, I am a sex offender under Indiana Code 35-42-414A, I can. So the first step that Indiana needs to take before going to a full-on everybody does it in every election would seem to be just simply remove the excuse and let anyone who wants to vote this way do so, especially now that we have a public health crisis in America.
And that was part of a question, a follow-up that I gave to Barb earlier, is what's the difference between absentee voting, which we have in Indiana, and this, and that, that is it, it seems like. It's these ballots are automatically mailed to you. You don't have to request them. There's no sort of an exemption. Am I getting that right?
Yes, exactly. We automatically mail to everybody. And, of course, there's provisions if you don't get it or your address has changed, if you can get a ballot, you can get a replacement ballot. But that's right. It's an opt-out system if you think about it. It's rather than a voter having to connect with their ballot by either going to a polling place or arranging for an absentee ballot. And Indiana has this absentee in-person provision where up to a month before you can go to a county clerk and get the ballot early and vote it there or get it in the mail. But that's the key difference. That's opt-in. The voter has to make an affirmative move to do that. Opt-out is here's the ballot, and you don't have to vote it. There's no mandatory voting in any of these states, and I don't think that ever will or should happen. But it is something that we let every election start with the voter having the ballot. And if you think about it, it does take away any, you know, it takes away a lot of those excuses and reasons. I mean, my kid is sick. I have to work late. The weather's terrible. There's a coronavirus out there. Whatever the reason, this puts the voter in control of how they then return the ballot.
Very quickly, before we wrap up this segment, we have a listener message from someone who says they support vote by mail but would want the ability to check to see if their vote was actually counted after they do it. Barbara, are those in place? Is that
yes,
kind of security
yes.
in place?
Yeah. So interestingly, Shelley and I and another of our colleagues, Polly, were in Orange County, California last week and Denver on Tuesday. For Super Tuesday, and we observed what their processes were. And there is something that both places use. They each do use different systems, but there's in Denver, I think it's Ballot Trace. So the voter can opt into that and follow where their ballot is in the process.
We're talking with the president and vice president of Indiana Vote by Mail, as well as the founder and board chair of the national organization Vote at Home, about a comprehensive vote at home strategy in Indiana. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we get back to today's topic, I want to tell you about yesterday's show. We addressed the coronavirus from an Indiana perspective with an epidemiologist and a physician who was part of the team that handled Indiana's first confirmed case. We got to a lot of your questions and learned quite a bit about what's at stake for Hoosiers. If you missed that one, find our podcast wherever you get podcasts. Just search for All In and look for our blue and black logo. Today we're joined in studio by Barbara Tully and Shelley Brown, president and vice president of Indiana Vote by Mail. And we're talking about what a comprehensive vote by mail system would look like in Indiana and the steps to get us there. We're also on the phone with Phil Kiesling. He founded the national organization called Vote at Home after seeing success with the system in his home state of Oregon. As always, we would love your questions and comments on the topic. Do you like this idea? Why or why not? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. And we have a voicemail to kick off this segment from Jeff. He has a comment about one added benefit of a vote-by-mail system that he has used. Let's listen to that.
Hi, this is Jeff from St. Joe County, Indiana. I lived in Oregon, and I voted by mail, and my favorite thing about it was the pamphlet that came, or booklet, that gave the positions of all the candidates in all the different offices. So I felt I was voting the most informed I've ever voted, and I appreciated that. So I'm all for it here in Indiana. Thank you.
Barb, one of the people I wanted at the table today, but he wasn't able to make it, was Bill Morrow. He founded the Indiana Citizen late last year, which is a voting engagement, voter participation. They're hoping to increase voter participation in Indiana, and we're a state that really needs it. Would you see a partnership like that developing between Vote by Mail and the Indiana Citizen to get some of that information in the hands of people? Because that's something that he wants to do with his website.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We will work with any organization that wants to increase voter turnout and make it easier for voters and remove obstacles to voting in Indiana. So absolutely, we work with Indiana Citizen. That would be a wonderful partnership.
And we kicked off the segment talking about yesterday's show about the coronavirus. And we were talking a little bit during the break about the fact that when pandemics like this strike, and we're in the midst of one right now, voting by mail can really be kind of, I guess, a help in some way.
It can be. So let's take Marion County, for instance, because that's where I live. I know for a fact, and I work the polling places, as does Shelley, that some of the polling places, I think I know of at least one in Marion County, there may be others, that are in a senior center. You know, and that's bringing in the seniors that live there into a central location in that facility to cast their ballots. But it's also bringing in people from outside, which in this day of coronavirus doesn't seem like maybe a very wise idea to expose those people. All of those people should be able to easily get an absentee ballot. So if you look at Indiana's absentee ballot reasons, there's 11 reasons on the absentee ballot application, as Phil alluded to, for why you can request an absentee ballot. I'm not sure why it's in the state's best interest that they need to know why X person can't show up at the polling place on election day, number one. Number two, if you're 65 in May, and that's one of the valid reasons that you can say I want an absentee ballot. If you're 65 in May for the election, right now under Indiana code, you have to reapply for an absentee ballot in November. You know what? You're still going to be over 65 in November. That just defies logic. Why can't we just get rid of that excuse at the very least, if not all of the excuses?
Mm. Shelley, let's get some background. How and when did this initiative, Indiana Vote by Mail, come about?
Our original founder, Bonnie Horlander, started working on this issue, we believe, somewhere around 2016, 2015. And then I worked the polls in 2016 and watched the lines grow to 2.5 hours in my polling location. I'm in Hamilton County. We had lines as long as 4 hours. And at that point, I said, that's unacceptable. We need to do something to make these lines shorter. And so when I found out about Vote by Mail, I wanted to join in. So I joined, and many of the other people that we are on our team joined in early 2017 with the same thing in mind. We had experienced difficulties in voting at the polls, and we wanted to do something to help make it better.
How would Vote by Mail shorten lines at polling places?
Oh, tremendously, because what they find is, as you give people the opportunity, for instance, to get a no-excuse permanent absentee ballot, over time it grows and eventually gets to a figure of around 70%. And once you get to 70% of the people voting no-excuse permanent absentee, it makes sense at that point to transition to full vote by mail. So
does that amount to a cost savings then? Do polling places then have to employ fewer people?
Yes, there's fewer people. And one thing we do want to make a point about is polling places are never eliminated. They have been in some states, but our aim is not to eliminate polling places. There's still a number of people who want to vote in person on election day, and we're not advocating to eliminate that opportunity for people. But we do want to give the folks that have more difficulties getting to the polling place the opportunity to participate in the process.
Barb.
What it does over time, as more and more people get mailed ballots, they see the benefit to it and they stop showing up at polling places. You don't do this overnight. Phil could probably speak to the progression of what this looks like. You don't eliminate polling places altogether. You slowly reduce them over time, because what would happen in a county is they would see that they would need less polling places because they just don't have as many voters showing up. You know, we saw in Denver and we saw in Orange County last week, they have those drop boxes that look way different than post office boxes. And people were driving up to them, putting ballots in all day long. On Super Tuesday in Denver, we went to a vote center There were no lines.
Hmm.
Very few people show up to actually vote in person.
Phil?
Yeah, let me add a couple things because this is absolutely right. Over time, if you have the same number of polling places, they get less and less populated. When you move to a full vote-at-home system is what we call it, you will not need to have hundreds of polling stations in a county, but having dozens, and Denver and Orange counties both have these, where a voter who lives in the county can go to any one of them. So you're not confined to your one and only in your neighborhood, but instead you have these much bigger facilities that any voter can go to. And that's been really important. And the other thing is why we call it vote at home is it turns out most people end up returning their ballots in person in these states because of what we've done.
We have another message on Twitter from Katie. She sent us a question. Coronavirus should make vote by mail a no-brainer update to the system, as if it wasn't before. Would the system allow for ranked choice voting, especially for the primary when a lot of candidates drop out before Indiana votes? That's getting specific. Is that part of your aim?
That is not part of our aim. We're just trying to get – we're trying to update and modernize Indiana's voting methods to make sure more people have access to voting.
I would agree that ranked choice voting is very valuable, especially if you look at the results from the recent primaries where if your number one choice or candidate dropped out, then your vote could be allotted to somebody who's still in the race. So I would say that we're in favor of it, but it's not currently part of our mission.
Phil, is ranked choice voting a variable in any of the states that have already adopted a comprehensive vote by mail system?
Not yet. There are going to be several states where the Democratic parties will hold a variant of mailing everybody in the party registered a mail ballot and then having ranked choice. That's in Kansas and Wyoming and Alaska and Hawaii. One of the things, though, that is important is that that's a unique situation in presidential primary, people dropping out. What we encourage people to do is to not move too quickly in any election. And we have found over time that more and more of the ballots are coming in the last 3 to 5 days. And the listener who talked about feeling more informed, that's the reason when I ask people in Oregon, why do you like it so much? That's the first thing that comes to their mind. I feel I can cast a more informed ballot. And if people then wait to that end, it does put a stress on the system, and journalists often don't like it because it may delay election results by another, you know, day or so. But it's a good protection for voters to not go too quickly. And you saw a lot of people in Washington State and Colorado in the primary probably vote earlier than they wish they had. And when you have these drop sites and vote centers and the like, there's a lot of infrastructure out there to collect ballots for people to feel it may be too late to mail it back. So all these systems evolved, and maybe ranked choice will come into it at some point for presidential primaries. But to reinforce, you know, what's been said, the focus here is to just simply let people vote in a more efficient way for every election that's out there and help evolve the system towards that in Indiana.
We're talking about Indiana adopting a vote-by-mail system with Barbara Tully. She's president of Indiana Vote-by-Mail. Shelley Brown is vice president. Phil Kiesling is on the phone. He's the founder and board chair of the national organization Vote at Home, and we are taking your questions and comments about it. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Phil, I want to come back to this ranked choice voting variable. Might it be an easy one to add, I guess, for vote-by-mail states who may want to consider it for primaries?
I think it could if that's all you have on the ballot, if all you have is a presidential primary contest to do it. Now, when you're having a full-on contest with everybody from president on down to Senate, Congress, governor, state legislators, and the like, that's a policy call that legislators have to make because you're doing a different election system than what you have right now. The technology, though, is out there to have that be done if you decide to do it. But I think Barbara and Shelley are right that even if you like it or not sure about it, it's a separate issue. But it would facilitate it. And by the way, again, to get back to why people really like it, it lets them make a more informed choice. Well, if you go to a ranked choice system, you're going to maybe want to spend some additional time thinking through how you would rank this candidate. It's not just a simple matter of this person, then move on.
Julie on Facebook has this question. Can voters in Washington and similar states change their vote if their candidate drops out just before the election? My son lives in Washington and was able to drop his ballot off at his local library. I'd love to be able to vote by mail, is what Julie carries on to say. Phil, do we have that answer?
Yeah. If you've turned it in, you can't. You can't get it back. That's why we urge people to hold on to it within a reasonable time before the election, before getting it back. And if they think that's a real possibility, which, again, isn't going to happen in most elections, but in the presidential primary, it will. But no, once a ballot has been cast, it's pretty clear that that's your vote.
That's
the way it should be.
We have another, and it seems like that would be a rare event that a candidate would drop out anyway, just ahead of the election. Karen sent us this comment on Facebook. I live in a very Republican rural town, and it was surprising what happened after I asked for a Democratic ballot for the last presidential election. Many people stopped talking to me. My kids were teased about being blue. Mail-in ballots would hide this, and people could really have privacy about their vote. Well, that's an interesting variable, Barb. Could this solve that sort of a thing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've had several comments from people who said, yes, I went into a polling place, and I live in a small town, and I've asked for X ballot, whichever one, it doesn't matter, and kind of gotten the side eye from somebody. And that is not the role of the poll worker. The poll worker should just be handing the person the ballot and saying, here, go over to this privacy booth and fill in your ballot. There should be no commentary at all about which ballot the voter is asking for, and a voter shouldn't be made to feel that way. So if you get a ballot in your house, nobody's going to know how you're voting.
Diana sent this comment on Facebook. I love the idea of vote by mail. I think disenfranchisement is the biggest threat to democracy, so anything that will help to guarantee our right to vote is great. I do, however, love going to my polling station to vote. The ritual of it all makes the act of voting seem important, and I look forward to sharing the ritual with my daughter. We're not talking about this going away, are we, Shelley?
No. The people who want to vote in person on Election Day can still do that. That's their choice. So, yeah, we in no way want to take that right away from people.
But Phil, in the states that have enacted this, did the number of polling places go down, and how does that affect rural voters? Oregon's a big state with a lot of ground to cover.
Yes, no, absolutely they go down, and that's one of the reasons you save the money, and it makes sense. But what happens in Oregon, let's take a rural county, you'll have a lot of the cities at the city hall, the library, the fire station will have these ballot drop sites. And you can physically take your ballot when you're in town to do that and take it back. A lot of people like that. I voted against this idea when I was a legislator back in 1989 because I get the argument about tradition. But what I realized was that I was confusing a particular ritual of democracy, and I know it's loved by many, but I was confusing the ritual with the essence, which is participation. And as Barbara and Shelley have emphasized, this gives voters the choice about how they return it. Yeah, they will not have that polling place in each of their, you know, as many across the landscape. But with these vote centers and the drop sites, they can vote in person. And the other thing is the rituals that people are creating around their own kitchen and dining room tables. I have people come to me and say, you know, I got kids, and we sit around the table and we get to talk about what this means to live in a democracy in America. And we're educating our kids in ways that we really couldn't when we were, you know, required to go to the polls. So rituals will change, but the essence of democracy participation very much promotes it. And I think if the rest of the country had had the turnout in the last presidential election as Oregon, Colorado, Washington did, there would have been 20, 25 million more votes cast. And I don't care who wins, okay? I want to see more people participate. And I would hope that that's the spirit we bring to this particular discussion.
Phil, 30 years has gone by since you were in a position where you voted against this, and it sounds like the reasons were sort of, I guess, rooted in tradition. But let's talk about the technological differences of now and 30 years ago. Is it easier now to make this happen quicker than it maybe was in 1989?
Yeah, it is much easier. We've gotten so much better about keeping track of voter registration lists, keeping them updated, using computer technology to have things be accurate. We have ways to count ballots much faster. And, of course, the paper trail in a recount situation, a close call, you have the voter-marked ballot. So it gives a sense of security that you don't have, particularly in a world where the technology also has the dark side, the ability to hack, go to a voter machine and the concerns that people have about that. And that's a whole other issue. But we have that. We also have the Internet. Jeff mentioned the phone caller that Oregon has the voter's pamphlet, which is a great resource. But even if you don't have something like that, you can today get online as you're sitting at your kitchen or dining room table and say, hey, I'm not sure about this race or this candidate. I need to find out some more information. Let me look it up. So very much we're in a world where technology helps. But here's the irony.
Let's hold that thought, okay. Phil. I do want to carry this into our next segment. We are talking about Indiana potentially adopting a comprehensive vote-by-mail system, and we will continue the conversation up next. We are with the president and vice president of Indiana Vote-by-Mail and the founder of Vote at Home on the phone. I am Matt Pelser. That is in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today, we are joined in studio by Barbara Tully and Shelley Brown, president and vice president of Indiana Vote by Mail. We're talking about Indiana adopting a comprehensive vote by mail system has been done out west in states like Oregon and Washington and Utah most recently. We're also on the phone with Phil Kiesling. He's the founder of Vote at Home. He's also their board chair. And Phil, when we left off, you had said that the irony of the situation is, and we were talking a little bit about things that have been done out in your area. How would you like to continue that? Is Phil, are you there? We might have lost. Phil, hi. Oh,
no, hi. I was going to mention the technology. A lot of people have said, well, in the world of software, let's just go to software machines at polling places. Isn't that a better idea? And the irony is that while the technology facilitates these systems much better than it would have 30 years ago, there's still, at the end of the day, we'd argue, no better medium on which to cast an actual ballot for the vast majority of voters than a piece of paper. An 8th century BC technology, if you think about it, I think was invented in China. And that gives people the assurance in those very close races that you can look and inspect every ballot and do an audit after an election to give people confidence in the results. And I think that's more important than it ever has been before, given what's been happening with allegations of various kinds of hacking and foreign involvement, et cetera. So people feel very good about the security and integrity of these systems in the states that have adopted.
Shelley, Phil brings up a good point. There's been a lot of talk about the integrity of our elections, and the one thing that we keep hearing and what he just talked about was paper, paper, paper. Why is a hard copy ballot so important?
Because you can recount it. In my county, in Hamilton County, we have these direct recording electronic machines. So I walk up to the machine, I vote, and I know at the end of the day, the only thing that's printed out from that machine is the tally of how many votes went to each candidate. There's no individual record of how I voted. So there's really no way to recount it and check and make sure that what the machine is saying is actually correct. So that's why we need to get to paper. And everybody's asking for it. I mean, the Select Committee on Intelligence, United States Senate report says that paper ballots are the most the best way to vote and avoid any kind of interference from bad actors.
We have a listener voicemail from Rick who has concerns about vote by mail. Let's listen.
Hello, my name is Rick. And I'm calling. I take a little exception to the this easy vote by mail. I think there's a lot of value in the community coming together once a year or once every 4 years with fellow voters. They can interact with each other, interact with the volunteers there. And I think it makes people put skin in the game. It takes effort to go. I think people that go are motivated by the issues or by the candidates. And I think if you make it too easy, it'll take away from the importance and the significance of voting. I think it should be easier than just unwrapping a candy wrapper and dropping it in a box. I'm not totally against voting by mail for elderly folks and people who can't get there, but I'm leery of making it too easy. Thank you.
Barb, I take Rick's point. It's a community thing, and it's kind of fun to go to your polling place.
I work the polling by local polling place on election day, and people get together and they see each other and they kind of hang around a little bit to the extent that you're able to kind of have chatting with people. I'm actually an inspector at the polling place, so I have very little time to do that. But yes, I take people's point that they like to show up at a polling place. To Shelley's point earlier, vote by mail does not preclude anybody's ability to show up at a polling place on election day. They could have received a ballot in the mail and they could still say, you know what, I'm not going to use this ballot. I'm going to show up at my polling place. Or they could vote their ballot and still show up at a polling place and put it in the slot at the polling place. So it's not taking away anybody's ability to vote in person if they choose to still do that. So it's giving voters choices. So to the man that called in and said, I think, you know, there needs to be some skin in the game and people need... Great, I understand that. Then come together. Then you show up at your polling place, but realize that the 2- and 3- and 4-hour lines that we saw in 2016, that's a lot to ask of people. Life is busy. Life is hard for lots and lots of reasons, for kids and caring for elderly parents. I mean, any number of reasons why people can't stand around in line for 2 to 4 hours in a very busy election season. So if they choose to, you know, vote by mail, let them. But if you want to show up and stand in line or not, or whatever it is you want to do, then go ahead. Do that, too.
But Shelley, if the lines are shorter and there are fewer people there, it's not as rich of an experience for someone like Rick who had that concern.
Yeah, I can see his point that it might be not as rich of an experience. And one of my answers to that, too, is there's other ways to be involved in your community other than just voting on election days. There's school board meetings, there's city council meetings, there's county council meetings, there's lots of...
Election board meetings.
Yeah, there's election board meetings. There's different places where you can go into your community and have a sense of community, joining with the other folks on issues that are going... I mean, county council meetings are held every month. You can go meet with people in your community and talk about the issues that are going on in your community. There's many opportunities to do this.
We have another listener voicemail. This one is from Pauline. Let's listen to that now.
Hello, I am Pauline, and I would like the guests to talk about the difference between the way votes are processed in a full vote-by-mail system and in an absentee ballot system. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Phil, you're from a state that has had this on the books for 20 years now. How is this different? What do we do?
Well, in any system with mail-in ballots, what you should do is verify every signature against voter registration cards. That's the integrity check, and it's a very important one. If you're in a state that has polling place elections and lots of absentee ballots, you have to process and count the absentee ballots last. That's how you guard against any kind of double voting. It's very rare, but it can happen. So the results that get released initially are the polling place results, and then you count the absentee ballots when you check who's gone to the polling place and make sure that people haven't voted twice. In a vote, all vote at home system, if you go that far, ballots that come in, you start processing them early, checking the signatures, lining them up, and then, of course, counting them through election day and releasing the results right when the polls close. Counting rules vary state by state, but if you have both systems going on at once, it's generally good accepted practice that you count the absentee ballots last.
We got a Facebook comment from Maddie who says, agree, this is a no-brainer. When I was a college student and seasonal employee living in other states, voting by absentee was one way for me to feel connected to my home community. I just recently moved to Indiana and I'm shocked that this isn't already in play. How do we expedite something like this for Indiana? That's a good point. Barb, what would be the first step? There's a lot that we need to do in order to get to a comprehensive system.
There is. So the first thing that Indiana needs to do, in our thought, is to remove the excuses off of an absentee ballot. As I had said earlier, there doesn't seem to be any need, or why is it in the state's best interest to know one of those 11 reasons why a voter can't turn up on election day? That kind of defies logic. So why not just remove the excuses and let anybody apply? The second step beyond that would be let people check a box that says, yes, I always want my ballots this way. Don't make me keep reapplying. In the case of elderly voters, we would suggest that would be a first step. But we've run into some problems, you know, in the legislature where, you know, in the last several years, the legislature has seen bills that would remove the excuses and they have not had hearings, which means they effectively get quashed in committee. Permanent has been quashed. I think full-on vote by mail has not been heard. I'm not sure. You know, we need to ask our legislators what's up with that.
Mm. Bernard sent us this on Twitter. If one is worried about a candidate dropping out, people in Seattle often hold their mail-in ballot until election day. Does it not need to be sent early? It does not need to be sent early, rather. Just get it postmarked or drop it off in a ballot box day of, no line, and still voting on election day. But wouldn't that slow the process down, slow down the returns for your particular state, Shelley?
It could. If everybody in the area only voted on election day, it could slow it down because many of the states that do vote by mail are processing those ballots in the days leading up to the election, verifying the signatures and getting things ready to do that tally on election day. So, yeah, it could slow it down a little bit, but it's...
Can I add something here, too? I'm a former journalist, and one of the big problems is journalists who are way too impatient. I just tell them to cool their jets. The Republic is not going to fall because counting every vote takes a day or two longer. And if the gain we make is far more participation, that is far and away worth the price of a few extra hours or people not being able to go to bed on election night knowing that an election in a close race is a certainty. And the gentleman who called in about the ritual, I understand that. Again, it's why I was initially voted against it. But let's not impose our idea of an important community ritual upon everyone else. And I'll go back to what I think Barbara said earlier about the first step ought to be remove all the excuses. I'm going to be 65 in a couple of months. Under Indiana law, when I turn 65, all I got to do to get a vote at home ballot is to check the box that I'm 65. I have probably more ability and health and other things to go to a polling place because I'm not working than many citizens who are much younger who are pulling down one, maybe two jobs, dealing with kids, dealing with relatives that need care. So the absurdity of having the excuses that Indiana has, focus on that first, and I would encourage listeners to really put that question to the legislators. Why are you allowing it under these circumstances for these people, but not allowing it for everybody?
One of the variables that exists in some of the states that have adopted a comprehensive vote-by-mail system is sending candidate language about what the candidate stands for. How is that put together in a way that is nonpartisan? Do we have that?
We have some examples, some really excellent examples that we got last week when we were in Orange County, California. And that is put out by the Registrar of Voters there, who is the Director of Elections, equivalent to the Director of Elections like here in Marion County. And they actually put it out in multiple languages, but it lays out what all the ballot initiatives are. So there's a lot of questions that voters have to vote on in California. And then it lays out every single person that's on the ballot for each office and some very basic information about each person. And it's how many pages is that book, Shelley? It's next to you. It's like 50 pages long.
It looks like a rural phone book.
I mean, there it gives sample ballots. It's a ton of information, and it's very good information, and voters deserve that information. So that is coming from, you know, the local election officials in Orange County. I think Denver does the same thing. In Indiana, election officials here, I think at the state level, believe that's not their role.
And there are a couple of organizations that are trying to fulfill that role, Indiana Citizen being one of the examples. I know that they're going to be coming out with some type of a voter guide for the fall election. They're not providing anything this spring. The League of Women Voters, and it does go by county, but I know Marion County and Hamilton County, they're putting together a nonpartisan voter guide that gets sent to all the candidates. They answer questions. They give information about their campaigns. And people can access that online. It should be available by the time early voting starts, which would be April 7th. And you can access that information on vote411.org. And you go and you put your address in, and it will give you a list of all the candidates that are going to be on your ballot, and it will show you the answers to various questions that we have asked.
Phil, do you get a voter guide with your ballot?
Yep. I think Oregon was the first in the nation to send such a guide out to every address, not just every registered voter. I think they're very valuable. But also, in the age of the Internet, there are civic organizations, League of Women Voters, others, that give candidates a chance in their own words to say, here's my position, why you should vote for me. So we encourage voters in our state to, you know, rely on a variety of sources. But the voter's pamphlet is been a stalwart here for nearly a half century.
I want to make sure we get to a couple of comments on our social media. We also have a voicemail left to go. Seth posted this question on our Facebook. This seems like a great idea. I'm going to venture a guess that the folks in power who would be responsible for changing this are pretty happy with the way our system currently works, though. What would it take to make this a reality? Basically, Seth is asking about the political challenge behind getting this done in Indiana, and there are several, it seems.
So part of the work that we do, I mean, we have kind of two ways that we do what we do. So one way is we do public education and speak to civic groups and any groups really about what vote by mail means. The other is that we advocate for legislation. So we're in the state house a lot during a legislative session. And we go to the House and Senate elections committees, and we know the chairs of those committees and the members of those committees. The one thing that I think we got a little bit of a step forward on this year was possibly a bipartisan idea that they glommed onto that we suggested to them about allowing voters who are 65 and older to permanently choose to get a ballot by mail. Right now, 65 and older is a valid reason, but you have to still apply every election. Let those voters who are 65 and older, if they choose to say, I always want my ballots this way. And just let's remove that one excuse and let our older voters who choose to do it always. And we may have some movement forward with that. So it's really engaging with this legislature. And then to the points that Shelley and Phil were making earlier, you know, you don't start vote by mail across the whole state all at once, flip a switch, boom, 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 everything's in place. You got to do it gradually. You have to do it county by county. You have to let counties, you know, experiment with municipal elections or with bond initiatives or something like that, as Phil had said earlier. You've got to let folks experiment with it, let county clerks digest what it means to them in terms of what their budgets are and staffing and how they deal with a greater volume of mail ballots, and let them see success before they go to kind of an election year like we have this year. And it's very slow progress, frankly, working with the legislature on that.
We have been talking about Indiana potentially adopting a comprehensive vote by mail system with the president and vice president of Indiana Vote by Mail. Barbara Tully, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Shelley Brown, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And Phil Kiesling is the founder and board chair of Vote at Home, which you can find at voteathome.org. Phil, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. Our podcast is wherever you get podcasts. Again, check out yesterday's episode about the coronavirus. Tomorrow is our Friday pitch-in. Our Statehouse reporter will wrap up the 2020 legislative session. We'll talk to the Hoosier Environmental Council about some of the bills that got attention this year. And will take to the stars with one of the people behind Westfield's Grand Universe development. In the meantime, we're on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.